You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 35 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the disappointing defeat to Chelsea as well as the Champions League exit at the hands of Bayern. The Grafsipan is a 10th contestant on the CAF countdown, and a Blackburn fan joins us on the line to preview Sunday's encounter.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Dov, how are you to start with?
I'm not bad. Considering Wednesday's defeat, I'm not too bad at all. But other than that, it's been quite a rubbish week, let's just say that.
It hasn't been the best of weeks, has it? Dan, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Steve. It's lovely to see you again down in Swindon. A little live episode. Well, live recording anyway. I agree with you, Dov. Bad week.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out to the listeners, we usually record in separate venues sort of thing, but today Dan's come down and joined me live in my my little recording studio, we like to call it, but it's all good. Right then, guys, well, we'll kick off by reviewing the disappointing, ultimately, defeat to Bayern. Dov, in the end, no fairy tale third successive final, but it was all the more disappointing, really, when you consider Raphael being sent off. We were dominating up to that point. Rooney's injury, him having to go off, and as Sean Fields points out, I mean, the fact we were 3-0 up at one point as well and looking so comfortable, it just all adds to the disappointment, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was, as I text both of you after the game, I was royally annoyed, shall we say. Without using some abrasive language, I was really annoyed after the game, and that was a great start. I mean, we've got to talk about Nani's goal, boys. How amazing was Nani's goal? That was fantastic.
I think his overall performance, to be honest, Dov, I think that's one of the best I've seen in a United shirt. Just the work rate as well. When he was put up front, he just seemed to really have the bit between his teeth, and he really was really up for it. It was fascinating to see.
He's one that's we've slated them before. I've tried to defend them, but obviously Dan and he's not very liked his performance very much. Thought he was maybe on the way out, and he's really stepped up, unlike a certain Bulgarian, which I'm sure we'll come on to later on.
Dan's shaking his head sat next to me. What about Dan? What about the performance of Raphael? Doing so well, wasn't he? Up to the red card, dealing really well with Ribery, but there was no need, was there, to pull him back?
No, I mean, Ribery wasn't even in the game in the first half. Raphael, like I say, doing really well. He had that chance as well to possibly wrap it up, really, at the end of the first half when he shot wide. But I think that the sending off, although it probably was a bit harsh to get sent off, it's fully understandable why the referee did it and why the Bayern players surrounded the ref as well, because I'm pretty sure if it was United, it would have been the same thing. The one thing is, I read an article saying that they could possibly have brought on John O'Shea, you know, at half-time. Obviously, Raphael's on a yellow card anyway, so Bayern are always going to go at him as a weak link, you know, if he gives away another foul. But it didn't happen, and it's unlucky. He'll learn from it, hopefully. As soon as that happened, you just felt that the tie had gone then.
Well, Dan, do you think he deserved to get sent off, though? Because I'm still of the opinion he shouldn't have been sent off at all.
I don't know, really. I mean, he let Ribery get away from him, and he was wrong side, and then he put his arm on his shoulder, didn't he?
It's a yellow card. It's a second yellow card for me. Pulling him back. He's away. He's clear.
I'm not sure he's clear because, you know, Vidic is there, Ferdinand's there, Evra will come round the left-hand side as well.
It's a professional foul, isn't it? He's stopping him from advancing.
Well, that's the thing.
He didn't really stop him, though, because all he did was put his hand on his shoulder, and he didn't really... I wouldn't say he didn't halt him. You know, Ribery stopped. I'd have done the same if I'd have stopped it when he was on the yellow card getting sent off, but...
The thing is as well, though, is that I was wondering what was the offence he committed for a yellow card, because you say professional foul, Steve, but that's not a cautionable offence. It's like unsporting behaviour is the only one I can see and that is actually an offence that he committed for pulling him back.
Well, it's his first yellow card that's the problem one, really. I mean, he got fouled in the corner by Van Bommel, who, let's say, was a bit dirty all the way through the game. Mm. arguably committed more fouls than what Raphael did, and yet Raphael ends up walking down the tunnel. But I mean, he shouldn't have retaliated like that. He wasn't getting the free kick, and he kicked out of Van Bommel. He's always going to go over it, and that's a daft yellow card.
But then Ribéry sort of nearly, like, Raphael was a bit shorter. Ribéry would have smacked him in the face when the Ribéry foul was on. So then you could say Ribéry deserves a yellow card for lashing out, striking a player. I don't think he should have been sent off at all. Yeah. I think the ref. I tended to agree with what Ferguson said about typical Germans, although they weren't German. But I think the referee was bullied into giving him that yellow card.
I don't know if the referee was going to give him a yellow. He didn't look like he was until the Bayern players went round him. But you know, it's what happens at the Champions League. You know, the teams are so clever. They know who's a weak link and who's on a yellow card and whatnot, and they'll always try and get that player sent off.
What about Wayne Rooney, Dov? Was that a bad call to start with him? Obviously, in hindsight, you can say it was, but his presence was worrying them, wasn't it? Until he sort of got that slight knock on his ankle once again, and then it just seemed to go downhill for him, didn't it?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a good call. It looked all right, to be fair, and obviously had a hand at a couple of the goals as well, and he was causing Bayern problems until, like you say, he did get that other injury, and you could see Van Buyten basically targeting him. Trying to go in hard on his ankle and things like that. But I thought it was a good call. I didn't see there was anything wrong with it. I think he would have came off quite soon after half time anyway.
Did Van Buyten get a yellow card for that kick out of him?
Not as far as I'm aware, no.
You see, that's another call. If he didn't, I mean, I can't remember if he did or not, but that deserves a yellow card. And that was a deliberate act of just sluggishness, really. But, I mean, Wayne Rooney, I mean, he played as well as he could do, really, with his injury. I thought it was a bit of a surprise. People were saying he looked all right in the warm-up, but you could tell he wasn't as sharp, obviously, as what he normally is. He couldn't really turn on the ball either. But as soon as he twists his ankle again, he should have come off then, really, because since then, that moment, Bayern had a little bit more of the game. I know we scored the third goal shortly before their first goal, but they were getting into the game a little bit more in that first half there, because when we won the ball back off them, we had no one to give it to, because Rooney was just hobbling around.
Do you think, we obviously spoke about Raphael and getting sent off, but do you think like the turning point in the game was the Olic goal?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was sloppy defending. You know, Michael Carrick, I don't know what he was doing there, really. I mean, he just seemed to stumble, didn't he? And Van der Sar, for a keeper of his ability and experience, he shouldn't be getting beaten from there. You know, I understand that if you shoot at a keeper's legs from, you know, a tight angle, it's harder to get down to, but that's the only place that Olic could have put that ball. And Van der Sar's got to be reading that, I think.
And you mentioned Carrick there, Dan. I mean, what did you make of, firstly, his performance and the fact that, as has been the case in the past, he's sort of being made out to be a bit of a scapegoat because he's sort of not been involved in the game as he would have liked to have been?
Well, I thought that, you know, when we went 3-0 up, I thought he was absolutely fine in the first half. He gave the ball away a few times, but it was nothing too drastic. There was a lot of other players who did exactly the same. Gibson, for one. Fletcher gave the ball away a few times as well, so I think Carrick, like you say, is a bit of a scapegoat, and it's someone who everyone can point the finger at. And I'm not sure why, because he's done a lot of good things for this football club. I mean, you can't win the amount of trophies he's won at United without being a decent player. All right, he's not someone who's going to get box-to-box. He's not going to get 10 goals a season. But what he will do is he'll start a lot of the attacks off just with a simple sideways pass, and he'll know exactly when to switch the play and things like that. So I think that he's underrated, Michael Carrick.
I think what people are complaining about, Dan, is more the fact he doesn't impose himself on the game. I think like the way that Fletcher will try and impose himself on the game and try and control it. Carrick's not really done that recently.
No, he's never done that, though, in his whole career. You know, everyone knows what type of player he was when we bought him. At Spurs, he never pulled Spurs through, did he? If they're 2-0 down, he's not the type of guy who's going to rally around people and get people through it and win 3-2, is he? He's not that type of guy. You're looking for a Roy Keane, and he's simply not that.
No, I don't mean a box-to-box player. I mean a player that can control a game. A player, like you say, who's going to set up the attacks, because over the past maybe, month or so, he hasn't done that, and his form has dropped. And I think you're looking for him to start the attacks, to be the, in quotation marks, quarterback, the Andrea Pirlo of the team, the guy that you look to, right, I'll look to him, he'll pick up a decent pass, he'll find one of the attacking players, and he's not been doing that recently.
I've noticed in the recent months as well, like, you know, the teams that have come to Old Trafford or whatever, they've when Carrick has played, there's somebody very, you know, close vicinity to him, not allowing him to spread the play and stuff like that, which you know, it obviously inhibits his game. But I think you're being a bit harsh, and I think everybody else who thinks that, you know, Michael Carrick somehow is you know, a poor play. I think they're completely wrong, really. I mean, there's not many better passes of the ball than Michael Carrick at the football club, I don't think.
Not at all. Steve, what do you think about Michael Carrick? Can you mediate a little bit?
I've always sort of been of the opinion that he's not one of the more influential players. I don't know, if I was to take out a player from the United team who I didn't think was having the effect that other players are, it would be Carrick, unfortunately. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I just think that what we lack is a Wesley Schneider sort of creative attacking midfielder that will push on. Fletcher seems to be doing that job, and I don't think that should be his job. I think he should just be in there to sit, harry, play it simply, and just get about the park. And I think there should be someone alongside him who can bomb on and get involved in attacks. And I think that's why Dimitar Berbatov has struggled so much, because there's not that player that can sort of play off and link up with him. And obviously, it's not been working with Berbatov up front on his own. So I think, not saying he's the weak link of the team, but if there was one player I would sort of swap from the United team at the moment, it would be Carrick, unfortunately.
Do you not think that Carrick, in that case, if you put Fletcher further back and put Carrick, you know, behind Berbatov, that might work? I mean, I know he's not a natural sort of... he's not a flair player, is he, Michael Carrick? But you can't argue his passing and his one-touch play and stuff like that in and around the box would be...
That's where I think maybe having Paul Scholes further up the park. I know he's getting on a bit, but I think having him further up would be a much better idea than having him sitting. So I think with his final ball and things like that, and the creativity he does has, it would be a much more beneficial thing for the team.
I think the thing with Scholes is, though, you'd have to sacrifice somebody else, because Scholes isn't going to be like virtually centre forward, and then he's not going to get back into midfield, is he, you know, to defend it. Whereas someone like Carrick or Fletcher, they're always going to get back in and keep the shape.
Well then, guys, we'll move on to briefly look at the disappointing, again, defeat to Chelsea in the Premier League. Dan Drogba's goal, it should have been ruled out, obviously it was offside, but at the end of the day, they were pretty much better than us all over the park, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, in defence, you know, you couldn't see us getting in behind John Terry or any of the other guys there, you know. The keeper didn't have a decent save to make, really. Midfield, Lampard just ran the show. Even Deco, I thought, had a very good game, even though he's been a bit part player for Chelsea this season. And up front, you know, Drogba came on and netted the winner. I mean, you know, it was controversial. He was at least a yard offside. And how the linesman can't see that, I don't know. But at the end of the day, you know, we deserve to lose. We didn't deserve anything out of that game, really. Even our goal was a bit lucky as well.
And Dov, we've given our thoughts before on Gary Neville, but he was particularly poor, wasn't he, against Chelsea. And we had an email from Michael Hines, and he suggested... Well, you can't believe that he's still in the United shirt. I mean, is that a fair comment? Or there's been times where he's played well this season. I mean, against Milan, he had a decent game, didn't he? Set up the goal for Rooney, and he's not had a bad season when he's been called upon. But against the really quality sides, when you're up against like a quick winger, he's just got no chance, has he?
Yeah, I think he's definitely lost any pace he had. And when you're coming up against somebody of Miludo's quality, who has been fantastic this season and has, like you say, lots of pace to burn, he really got... shown up, and I would say he's still got something to offer. He's a club captain, and I think more against sort of weaker sides, I think that's maybe where he should be playing. And the fact that Giggs, Scholes and Neville all started the match, it really, I think that was something wrong with the team selection on Alex Ferguson's part. I mean, you can't, I've never thought that these days you can't have the three of those players starting simply because they're too old and they don't have the pace to get about the park. And when you're playing Chelsea, who they're such a powerful side, I think that was something on Fergie's part he needs to look at. And I think obviously it did going into Wednesday's game where none of them started.
I mean, I just think that there was sloppy defending all the way through. We've not defended well all season, and the first goal in that game was always going to be vital. Gary Neville, he got done on the left-hand side, didn't he? But even then, I think Ferdinand, he's got to look at himself there. He's not marking anybody. He can get across to Malouda before he crosses the ball, at least, you know, and he cuts out the supply. And obviously, a good finish by Joe Cole, but I just think it was a disappointing day all round. And like you say, Ryan Giggs didn't even get into the game. Scholes was just fouling everyone. Gary Neville, like you said, he was getting torn apart, really. And I actually felt sorry for him.
Yeah, I think like over the both games, I think the midfield really didn't step up to the plate, basically. I think the midfield really was non-existent. I think Chelsea's midfield completely overran ours, and we had three in midfield at this point as well in the centre. So I think maybe that would show that there's improving of the side to be done there.
Well, funny you should say that, Dov. We'll move on to the emails that we haven't read out already. And Vishnu Shari, he's suggesting that if we don't win the Premier League, I mean, is it time for a mass clear out? And also an email from Tudy. They want to know if Ferguson was to bring someone in, I mean, who would it be? I mean, Ferguson said that he would just tweak the squad. There's no need for major investment. But where is the key position, do you really think, that need to be addressed in the summer?
I think you're right, like what you said about a creative midfielder, somebody like Wesley Snyder or David Silva maybe would be a realistic target. We could get him, and maybe Daniele De Rossi. I would quite like to see him in a United shirt because he's a fantastic footballer and he would give that sort of box-to-box quality that maybe we're lacking a little bit as well. So possibly a striker, but I don't know who would buy Dimitar Berbatov because he's a bit overpriced.
I'm not sure what the goalkeeping situation lies. I mean, Van der Sar, is he 39, 40 now?
Yeah.
He's obviously pushing on a bit and he can't last forever. I'm not saying I get rid of him for next season, but we need somebody there who's going to be able to step in if and when needed. We've obviously got Ben Foster, who I've still got faith in Ben Foster. I'd never rated Thomas Kujak, so I would look at getting rid of him. Gary Neville, you know, we need a right back. We've got Raphael coming through, but again, he showed the other night he's vastly inexperienced. John O'Shea, he's a steady player. It was good to see him back on Wednesday as well. So maybe that's a situation that we could look at. Left back as well, we don't have any, we've only really got Evra. I was saying to Steve last night actually about the fact that he's not had a rest all season. And he's starting to show it now. I think he's starting, his performance levels are dropping a little bit.
For that position, I'd give Fabio a chance. Cause
he's always injured though, Dov. I mean, he yeah. steps onto reserve field and he just gets injured. I don't know what it is about him. I hope it's not something that's going to wreck his career because he does look like a decent prospect. And obviously in midfield, I do think I completely concur with you guys saying, you know, that we need someone a bit more creative, a bit more flair, something. None of our midfield got any tricks up the locker. You know, there's no one. You know, Anderson from time to time will throw something in there, but Carrick's never going to do anything, you know, spectacular sort of with his feet and work the ball well. Fletcher's certainly not. Scholes could do it, but like you say, he's passed it. And Gibson's just your run-of-the-mill midfielder, really. So there's no one in there who can actually, you know, light up a game. And that's something that we've missed. And up front, we do need cover. I don't think there's a lot of players we've got there. Michael Owen's been injured. Berbatov, like you say, he didn't really do anything against Chelsea or against Bayern when he came on. I don't know, there's something missing. That, I mean, it's not been a bad season, but there's just that little spark missing, I think. And I think it does stem from midfield, really.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, we'll move on to an email, two emails from Daniel Lang and James McAllister. Just wanting to know a little bit more about Javier Hernandez, the Mexican player that we've recently signed from Chivas in Mexico. A brief little profile for you. He's 21 years old, although when he does join us, which is in July this year, he'll be 22. He scored on his debut for the Mexican side Chivas, and that was in 2006. He was a top scorer, he's a current top scorer in the Mexican league, which is actually split into like three separate groups rather than one big league. He's got 10 goals in 11 games, so he's going through a pretty decent patch of goal scoring at the minute. In terms of his international record, he's got a decent record too, 4 caps and 4 goals. But against, can we say, lesser teams, he got a brace against Bolivia, one against New Zealand and one against North Korea as well. But
Mexico's Peter Crouch.
Well, there you go. But Dov, I mean, he must have a bit of ability for Ferguson to spot him and want to sign him. But what does it say for the likes of Federico Maceda, Mami Diouf, Michael Owen, Danny Welbeck? They must be thinking, I mean, are we going to get a chance next season?
Well, I don't think he'll come in and get into the first team straight away. I think he'll have to play some reserve football, have to prove himself. I mean, I've only seen clips on YouTube. He looks like a decent player. He'll have good technical ability because the Mexican League is reasonably technical as well. But it was surprising the way it was announced, like right after the Bayern game. It was like he was trying to deflect attention from the defeat a little bit. But I'm quite happy getting a younger player in, seeing what he's like. I think Michael Owen's a bit too injury prone for us. And just basically see what he can do. If he can't do it, it's not too much money as well. And I think Ferguson's already said, I mean, if he doesn't make it like 3 or 4 years at the team, and they'll have a decent resale value. So I don't think there's any problems with the signing. I'm quite happy with it, see what he can do.
Dan, Safi and Ben Zoya, just wanted to get our views on Federico Maceda. I mean, we had a little chat last night and I was saying that in the long run, I don't think he's really got enough to cut it at United. Obviously scored a screamer against Villa last season, came up with a few goals, important goals last season. The Chelsea goal, a bit fortuitous, but like you said last night, nonetheless, you've got to be there. You've got to be there to score the goals. So what's your views on Makeda and sort of long term? Do you think he's got a future?
I think he's been unfortunate this season. He's been injured, you know, a fair bit. He's never really, he's not been allowed to move on from last season's heroics. So I think it's a bit harsh to judge him now. But I mean, I think he's obviously got ability. He's decent on the ball. He's got fairly good pace. And he can finish as he's shown. You know, like all young strikers, though, he's got to be given a chance. And like you say, with this Hernandez coming in from Mexico, that might, you know, inhibit his chances. But I think that overall, Ferguson rates him highly. He's come out in the press the last week or so, saying he's going to be a decent player for us. So we've just got to bide our time with him, really. I mean, he could possibly go out on loan if we get another, you know, high profile striker in the summer. That'd be a good move for him. But he seems to be, you know, he seems to be knocking on the door anyway.
And without sparking too much of an argument, Dov, Eddie Gillat, he sent in an email, which I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear about. Dimitar Berbatov, he suggested that at £30 million, that shouldn't just buy you little glimpses of magic, that you should get more bang for your buck. I mean, recent times, he'd hardly do a lot against Bayern, could he? Thrown on sort of last 10, 15 minutes, there's not a lot he could have done there. But against Chelsea, that was his big chance to shine, and ultimately, he didn't take it, did he?
He didn't, no. He didn't have much support, but I didn't think he got into the game at all, and I'm in agreement with Eddie Gillat there, definitely. But I know we've been over it quite a few times, that me and Dan having the for and against Dimitar Berbatov, but here's one I want to throw at you, Dan. Do you think Ferguson actually still maybe trusts him or likes his ability or thinks he's worth the money? Because he didn't start against Bayern Munich, and a Wayne Rooney, who clearly wasn't fit, he's managed to rush back, he's probably pumped full of painkillers. He started Wayne Rooney over Dimitar Berbatov, and I think that says a lot about what Ferguson thinks about and rates Dimitar Berbatov at. I mean, what do you think about that?
I don't think it's a fact of him not trusting him or not believing in him. I think it's just the fact that, like Steve said before, you know, if you've got Rooney on the pitch, especially in the form he's been in this season, he gave the fans a lift. As soon as his name got read out, it was like, oh, Rooney's playing, we've got a chance here. And obviously, Rooney's going to scare the Bayern defenders as well, more than what Berbatov would. But I think you're being harsh on the Chelsea performance. I mean, I know he had that chance at the end, which he probably should have scored. But the whole team were awful that game. And I think, you know, to just single out Berbatov just because he didn't score a goal was a bit harsh, because he didn't really have much of the ball, I don't think. Midfield didn't supply him well enough.
To be fair, everything he did get the ball, his first touch was horrendous.
Well, he's probably like, you know, everyone's having a go at him. He's probably a bit nervous going into a Chelsea game without your main strike partner next to you, or, you know, all the pressure that's on Berbatov because of people like you. I'm going to pop at him every time he plays, you know. And as well, you know, when he comes on against Bayern, I mean, come on, if he was Berbatov in that situation, like you say, you know, Rooney's like half fit. He's been picked ahead of him. But Berbatov must have woke up on Wednesday morning thinking, oh, I'm starting here. I've got to make a name for myself. And then Rooney plays instead of him. He must have been gutted sat on the bench.
No, not only yet.
Then Fergie, 10 minutes to go, says, go on, get on, get us a goal. You're like, are you having a laugh? come on, I mean, I'd be annoyed, but I mean, I'm sure he'll start tomorrow against...
I've got many other options.
No, I'm sure he can. He'll probably start Makeda now.
Dimitar, but you're right what you're saying. He must hate it. He knows that he's never going to get a game if Wayne Rooney's fit. And he's not done anything, really. He's had a few decent games against, like, Bolton and teams like that. No disrespect to them, but, I mean, against the big teams, what has he done?
I still stand by what I was saying earlier about him needing a creative midfielder around him that he can link up with. Just putting him up front on his own, I just don't think works at all. And it's worked with Rooney and Berbatov. The times they have played, they've looked decent. They've sparked up a decent little partnership together. And it's just, I just don't think it works with Berbatov up front on his own. But as I just said, there's not many other options at the moment. I don't think you can throw in someone like De Jong at this stage of the season and Makeda as well and rely on them to sort of help us win the title. So it really is the only option, with sort of Park or someone like that playing off him. But next season, we keep saying that every season, don't we? Next season will be Berbatov's season. But no, he really does have to step it up towards the end of this season and course going into next season.
I think he's been in such good form the last few weeks, and then he doesn't get his chance. You know, he had one chance against Chelsea. He must be, like you say, he must be disappointed, because he's played well. Like I say, he played well against Wolves, he played well against Bolton, and a few other games mixed in there where he played very well in. And then not to play in the biggest game, i.e. Bayern Munich, on a Wednesday night at Old Trafford.
But he's one of your big names, Dan. He's one of the guys you think, right, this is one of the guys we're going to look to for inspiration, for a bit of spark, a bit of creativity, and he doesn't provide it.
Yeah, but when you're brought on with 10, 15 minutes to go and you're expected to save the game.
More against Chelsea then.
Oh, okay. He never had the ball, Dob. I mean, you're saying that the amount of times he had the ball, he gave it away and stuff, but he didn't have anybody in and around him. Giggs was miles away from him. Scholes was sat deep. You know, there was nobody. But he's not going to hold it up against John Terry. And, you know, John Terry's one of the best defenders in the world. And for him to hold it up and then to lay it off to somebody else who was, you know, not even in the vicinity, I think it's a bit harsh. I mean, he should have done better, yes, but so should the rest of the team to help him out a little bit there. Because they know he's not Wayne Rooney. They know he's not going to do the same things as what Rooney is.
All right, well, we'll move on. We'll leave that there and we'll move on to discuss our player and cabbage of the week. Dov, it's a tricky one to pick out a player, but who would be your player of the week in what has been a really poor week?
Has been disappointing, you're right in saying that, but I think that one player who's sort of shone above a lot of the rest of the team has been Nani. I thought he looked dangerous when he came on against Chelsea, really gave us a spark going forward that we were lacking for the rest of the whole game before that. And then his couple of goals against Bayern Munich and that little back heel flick thing, that was brilliant. That was absolute genius. And I think this season, or the second half of the season, has been the making of him. So he's my player of the week this week.
Dan?
Yeah, that's a good one, Nani. I think, like you say, when he came on against Chelsea, he was very good. He was unlucky not to start that game. I'm trying to think of anybody else. I thought Gibson played quite well in midfield against Bayern. But I think overall I'm going to give it to Fletcher. I think he's really stood up now, and I think he's a definite United captain of the future.
I mean, the obvious choice is Nani, and if I wasn't going to give it to Nani, I'd probably go for Rio, to be honest. I thought, although Dan said he was probably at fault slightly for the first Chelsea goal, I thought against Bayern he played really well, and there was no blame for me towards him for any of the goals. And just against Chelsea as well, I don't think he was particularly poor. I don't think any of the goals were his fault, even though Dan said he did think. But yeah, I'm going to give it to Rio this week. What about Cavage, Dan? Start with you.
I think Ryan Giggs. I mean, I don't think he's as fit as what he has been all season. Obviously, he's been injured. I think against Chelsea, he was anonymous. Didn't really get into the game. And against Bayern, when he came on, I thought he was poor as well. So yeah, Ryan Giggs.
Dov?
I'm going to give it to, I think, Gary Neville. Just for his performance against Chelsea, he was abject and he really got torn to pieces. And could have gave away a penalty as well. So he's my cabbage this week.
I'll go for someone different as well. I'm just going to give it to Raphael. I just think it was stupid. It was inexperience. As much as we were saying earlier that you guys thought it was harsh, I just think if you let go of him and don't touch him at all and just let him go, there's no chance of you getting in trouble. And with 11 men on the field, even with Olic scoring, there's nothing to say we could have gone on, and even with Robin scoring, there's nothing to say we could have gone on and got another goal with 11 men because we could have piled forward. But I mean, he was playing so well as well. That's a disappointing thing. He was dealing with Ribery well. You could see he had the confidence. He was even bombing on and having shots at goal. So it was a shame, but just for lack of experience, really, I'm going to give it to Raphael.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Next up on the cast countdown, we have Gav. How are you, Gav?
Not too bad, mate. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm in a bit of technical difficulties here, but I'm sure we'll glide through it. Bad result of the weekend. Do you think we could still go on and win the league now?
Yeah, I'm confident we can, but big game now on Wednesday. I think if we don't get a positive result, we're in trouble.
Yeah, well, like you say, I mean, what do you think about the offside goal? I thought it was a bit debatable, wasn't it?
There was no debate. The fact is, he was the country in my left side, but my problem is that they were allowed to get into that position with pretty much no opposition from my lad, so what can you do?
Well, yeah, to be fair, I mean, there's no arguments on the result. I think Chelsea deserved to beat us. Just didn't turn up, yeah. I don't think, and it can't all be Wayne Rooney's fault, can it?
No, it can't. It shouldn't be. You know, his lineup was sketchy, but there you go. I'm not the manager, I don't make these decisions.
No, you're not. All right, okay, well, we'll get cracking on the countdown. The clock starts now, so good luck. At which ground did Eric Cantona score his first competitive goal for United?
Selhurst Park.
Against which team did we win the League Cup in 1992?
Aston Villa.
Who was Bobby Charlton's testimonial match against in 1972?
Man City.
Who is the current United number 13?
Park.
Who did Gary Neville score his first league goal against?
Everton.
At which grounds did Dwight York score his first United hat-trick?
Listen.
It's which town were the Neville brothers born?
Bury.
In which year did George Best announce his first retirement?
1974.
No, it was 1972. I counted down as you got two right. You got the number four right, which was the current United 13, which was Park. And number seven, which was, you got the Bury one right. Yeah, they're the only ones, unfortunately. Do you want me to run through them with you? Cantona scored his first competitive goal at Stamford Bridge for United. We beat Nottingham Forest in 92 for the League Cup. Bobby Charlton's testimonial match was against Celtic. Gary Neville scored his first league goal against Middlesbrough in 96-97.
Yeah, and his last one against Everton.
So, there you go. But it was unlucky. That. I thought some of them questions were quite tough.
They're there.
Yeah, but you either know them or you don't.
That's it, yeah. Some of them are a long time before my time.
Well, all right. Well, that's great. Anyway, thanks for joining us on the countdown. So, just unfortunate with your results there.
No worries. No worries. All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to hand over to Dov now. No reserves review this week, and there wasn't an under-18s game either. So, Dov, let us know who your legend is for this week.
Well, Steve, since there's no reserve games or under-18 games, I decided I'm going to bring a big one out, a big hitter. And this week's legend is Dennis Law. The King or the Lawman. He was born on the 24th of February 1940 in Aberdeen in Scotland. He began his career playing sort of schoolboy football in Aberdeen, and he was picked up by Huddersfield Town, incidentally enough. He was actually spotted by Huddersfield scout Archie Beattie. So he invited him down for a trial at Huddersfield. The manager at Huddersfield said when he came down, he says, "The boy's a freak. Never did I see a less likely football prospect. Weak, puny, and bespectacled." Yeah, so, obviously, he went down as a 16-year-old, and, well, they didn't really think he was a football player as such, but he did well when he was down there in his trial, and he did get signed by them. And he made his debut for Huddersfield in the second division on the 24th of December 1956 as a 16-year-old, and the Huddersfield went on to win that game 2-0. At the time, Sir Matt Busby was the United manager. He actually offered Huddersfield £10,000, which was a stupid amount of money, especially for a teenager, but Huddersfield turned that amount down. Another point to note is that Huddersfield, the manager of Huddersfield was Bill Shankly, and when he moved to Liverpool, he tried to take Law with him, but good for us that Liverpool were unable to afford him. Although he did eventually move from Huddersfield in March 1960. He signed for Manchester City for a British transfer record of £55,000. The team City were at the time, they weren't really one of the best sides. Lawton himself actually thought that Huddersfield were a better team than City, but he did not bad when he was there, and got 21 goals in 44 league games for them. But he did want to play for a more successful team, and was sold to Torino in Serie A in the summer of 1961. His time at Torino wasn't really the best, shall we say. When he arrived, Inter said that he'd signed a pre-contract with them, so he tried to stop him becoming a Torino player. Obviously, this didn't happen. And he didn't really fit in. Basically, the way that Italian clubs worked at the time was that they were very sort of... he said it was like a prison. Everything was sort of watched and monitored and things like that. It wasn't something he was used to. It also didn't really like the style of play much either. Obviously, in Italy, it's a bit more defensive than the English game, and was a lot more defensive at the time as well, because Catenaccio was just sort of coming to the fore as a system in Italy. So obviously, forwards didn't really get much chances to score and were very, very well marked and sort of kept out of the game. He was also injured in a car crash in February 1962, along with their teammate Joe Baker, or he was unhurt. Baker was nearly killed in that. And then by April, basically he'd had enough and he wanted to leave Turin, and he handed in a transfer request. There's one story, incidentally, I found out, is that when he was playing for Torino in a match against Napoli and he was sent off, and the coach, Beniamino Santos, said to him, they actually told the referee to send him off because he was angry at Law for taking a throne, which he'd been told not to do. So basically, Law had had enough by this point and said he wanted out. And Sir Matt Busby came in and he signed for another British record, which was £115,000 in the same thing that he'd done, the 10th of July, 1962. When he came back to England from Torino, he said, when he came back to United, it just felt like it wasn't being marked at all. So he might not have enjoyed his time, but it's possible that it had a positive effect on his game. And Busby, obviously, finally got his man after trying to sign him before. And he says, Dennis would have been good value twice the price, obviously, signing him for a British transfer record. Obviously, this was the time of his career where basically he won the most, and this was the most successful period of his career. His first match for United was against West Bromwich Albion on the 18th of August 1962, and scored his first goal after only 7 minutes. The match eventually finished in a 2-2 draw. He also sort of showed good form in the FA Cup. He scored a hat-trick in a 5-0 win against Huddersfield, his old club, and United went on to reach the final against Leicester City. And Law scored in that final as well, which we won 3-1. Although in 1962, in this season, he actually sustained a knee injury, which would go on to sort of hamper his career in sort of in future years. Also, he was involved in an incident with the referee, Gilbert Poulin, who apparently was sort of goading Law and sort of taunting him during the game. I mean, imagine this sort of these days, a referee goading a player, say Howard Webb, sort of telling Wayne Rooney he thinks he's too good and things like that. So after the game, of which the referee was doing this, Dennis Law and Matt Busby took the matter to the Football Association, told them about it, and then the referee, Poulin, was disciplined in a way. But he didn't like the fact that this was happening and quit the game. And the Law actually thought that this made him a marked man for other officials. He said, in the eyes of some referees, I was a marked man. So he also thought of it, obviously, that some of the later punishments were due to this as well. In the 63-64 season, he played for a rest of the world side against England, and he described it as one of the greatest honours of his career as well. The season after, 64-65, he won the European Footballer of the Year award. And that year, we won our first title since the Munich air disaster. Law actually got 28 league goals that season and was the first division's top scorer. Again, the following season, he injured his knee again while playing for Scotland. Which again went on to trouble. In 1966, an incident happened with Matt Busby. Law had asked for a pay rise in his next contract, and basically said if he didn't get it, he would leave. So Sir Matt Busby, being the man he was, transfer listed Dennis Law and basically said that no player will hold the club to ransom, no player at all. And then when obviously Dennis Law went to see him about this, Sir Matt Busby had drafted a written apology, told him to sign it, and then it was handed to the press once done so. Law said afterwards that he'd been given the pay rise, and Busby used the incident as a warning to other players, don't do that as such. As we all know, in 1968, United won the European Cup for the first time, but Dennis Law didn't play in the final or the semi-final because of this troublesome knee injury, although he was vital in the run to get in to the semi-finals and the final. So it's a shame that he couldn't play in such a big game, but obviously it was a great achievement for the side when he was part of the side, got there. So season after, we got to the semi-finals of the Cup, we got beat off AC Milan. Season after, obviously, Busby left the club and Ralph McGuinness took over. Law missed most of the 69-70 season and then was placed on the transfer list in the end of the 1970 season as well for £60,000, but nobody made a bid for him. A season after Frank O'Farrell took over as United manager, Law started well, but again, injuries sort of took its toll, and he only managed to score 12 goals during that season as well. It was Dennis Law who recommended Tommy Docherty for the United manager's job. Frank O'Farrell wasn't really getting the results, and Tommy Docherty was brought in. And ironically, it was Doherty who actually sold Law on a free transfer in the summer of 1973 to Manchester City. I think everybody can guess the incident I'm going to talk about. It was the last game of the 73-74 season. It was at Old Trafford against City, and Law sort of backheeled a goal in to give City a 1-0 victory. And many people think that this goal actually relegated us, but it didn't. We would have been relegated anyway if we'd drawn the match, so we needed to win. Obviously, Law didn't know this at the time, and he sort of walked off the park, head down. He was substituted as well. He's actually said it was one of the most sort of depressing sort of periods of his career ever. He said, "I have seldom felt so depressed as I did that weekend." His club teammate as well, George Best, he described him as up there with the all-time greats, electric, as a bloke and as a pal. He's different class. And incidentally, Dennis Law was actually at George Best's bedside when he, obviously, tragically died in November 2005. He had quite a tenacious playing style, to say the least. He was one of the best strikers of his generation. He scored stupid amounts of goals. And came for United in 404 appearances. He scored 237 goals, which is absolutely phenomenal. He had great technique. He was fantastic in the air. For a small man, he was only about 5'9" as well. So for a small man, he was fantastic in the air. And he also had great reflexes. Anticipation was fantastic as well. He really was intelligent and knew where to be. He had great awareness of his surroundings. He knew where the defenders were, where his teammates were as well. He also liked to drop back a lot. And he was often seen helping out his teammates in midfield and wasn't bad in a tackle as well. Some people said that he was a bit of an arrogant footballer, a bit maybe too sort of heavy-handed in his style and approach. But it was effective, to say the least. And he also had a goal celebration, which was mimicked throughout the sort of 60s and things like that. He used to hold on to his long sleeves, and you just see his thumb sticking out of them. He used to put his hand up in there, maybe a bit like Alan Shearer's, but much more classy. He also had quite an esteemed international career. He, obviously being Scottish, he played for Scotland. He wasn't chosen to play in the 58 World Cup. He did score though on his debut on the 18th of October 1958 for Scotland against Wales, and basically was a first team player ever since then. Scotland played England in 1961 on the 15th of April. Scotland lost the match 9-3, and Law basically, he described this as the blackest day of his career. Obviously, he was a staunch Scotsman, so I can imagine how unhappy he felt that day. Although redemption was soon to come. In 1967, Scotland beat England 3-2 in the British Home Championship. This was obviously when Scotland became the world champions. And he says that victory over England was even more satisfying that day. He also played in the 1974 World Cup finals as well. Although Scotland never won a match, they didn't qualify for the second round and weren't beaten. It was shortly after this they actually decided to retire from the game. He was told he wasn't going to play at Manchester City, and he would have played in the reserve, so he basically just retired there. And then, since retiring, he worked obviously radio and television, things like that, summarising games. He was inducted into the English Football Hall of Fame in 2002, and obviously there is the Statue of Law along with Charlton and Best at side Old Trafford, the Holy Trinity. He won a number of trophies during his career. Obviously he got the FA Cup in 63, the league in 65-67, and also the European Cup as well. And he's also the sort of joint record goal scorer for Scotland with 30 goals in 55 games. He holds that with Kenya and that leash, although he got it less caps, so some would say his record is a bit better. But I want to finish with a quote from our manager, Sir Alex Ferguson, and he sort of sees Law as his most idolised player. And he basically says, "Dennis Law was my hero as a player. I idolised him. When I first met him, I was so excited. I was at a game in Paris. He had played in the first half, and we went for a cup of tea afterwards. I thought, this is it, I've made it. I'm having a cup of tea with Dennis Law. For me, he epitomised everything a Scotsman is about. He was daring and courageous. He had that bravado about him. He had style. He was a truly fantastic footballer." Like I say, you don't get much higher praise than one of the greatest managers in the history of the game. saying things like that about you. So Dennis Law is certainly one of the greatest players ever to have played his trade at United, and one of the greatest strikers the British, well, Scotland has ever produced, probably the greatest striker Scotland has ever produced. And so this week he is a deserved legend.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, everybody, it's that time on the RedCafe.net podcast where we welcome an opposition fan onto the show. And this week, as we are playing Blackburn at the weekend, we have Mikey Delap from the Wild Blackburn Rover, .blogspot.com. It's a Blackburn Rovers blog. Mikey, welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
It is an absolute pleasure. How are you doing?
All right, not bad. It's a long day at work, but nothing out of the usual, put it that way.
Good stuff. We shall get right into it. Your beloved Blackburn Rovers, you're on some decent form at the moment. Recently got a incredible draw with Chelsea. Do you think that you can keep the form going to the end of the season? I see you're at 11th in the league at the minute. Do you think you can maybe get a top half finish?
I'd certainly like to think so. I mean, I think from our point of view, I think we've kind of been threatening to be in the top half for quite a while, actually, since the turn of the year, because I mean the only thing that's really been holding us back is our away form. As you might be able to see from the league table, the home form's kind of up there in the sort of top six or seven. It's more the away results which have let us down. So I think top half's definitely realistic, but we do have some pretty tough fixtures outside of yourself. We've also got Arsenal at home and Villa away in amongst the other fixtures, so it'll be a big ask, but it's certainly not of our reach at all.
I was reading about Big Sam, he said after, I can't remember what game it was, that he said your home form is up there with the top four, so
he can be a bit generous with his calculations, and I think I'll be the first to admit that he's he is a bit of a glory hound. He likes to big himself up a bit, but I think it's also borne out the fact that with teams like Blackburn, what you'd perceive to be the smaller teams, they often don't really attract the credit that perhaps they deserve sometimes. So it is up to the manager of the of teams like Bolton and Wigan and Blackburn, when they do something good, just to point out a bit more obviously.
Well, it is a good home record, so I'll give them that. Maybe not that good, but it's not too bad at all. I did mention the Chelsea result. It was a 1-1 draw, and that was just after they crashed out of the Champions League. Obviously, we've got Bayern Munich this week. This is recorded before the Bayern Munich game. Will you be looking, or obviously you'll be looking to take advantage of us playing midweek, but do you think you can?
I'm confident we can get something. I mean, if you take a look, obviously, first off at the home form, but also the fact that Man United generally haven't really done that well after a midweek game, and also factor into that that we don't have a midweek game as well. It does make it difficult for you. I think we're probably going to give you a bit tougher game than maybe some of the more casual fans probably expect.
Being that Big Sam and Fergie, they're quite good friends. They like to have a little bit of a rant against Benitez, for example. Do you not think that Big Sam will maybe do us a wee favour, give us some 3 points in the chase for the title?
Nah, I don't. I think you're probably clutching a little bit at straws there, maybe. But he's. I know they do get on very well. I know he's always. I mean, Sam always likes to point out that he's good mates with Sir Alex, because obviously it gives him a bit of a foothold as far as credibility goes. But yeah, no, I don't think he does any favours. I mean, as with Benitez and with Ancelotti recently, I think Allardyce does take a bit of pride in kind of disrupting the big boys in a way, making sure he makes his mark, so there's always something that that draws attention to him.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say I'm a wee bit worried, because one of your players, Olsen, I believe, got in trouble recently over his theatrics, shall we call them. And do you think anything like that could possibly happen at the weekend, and what's your opinion on what happened as well?
I think it has got a little bit blown out of proportion. I mean, I must say for starters that I'm not, I don't condone diving in the area. I mean, I'm not a particularly high-level player myself. I'm Sunday League at best, but I always believe in playing the game quite honestly. I don't think what he did was the right thing to do, but at the same time, let's not cloud the fact that every team's player does it. I mean, not just ourselves, but that yourselves and Arsenal and Liverpool. Heck, I mean, even Steven Gerrard, who banged on for ages about being as honest as you can. He's taken a fair few tumbles in the box. I think, if anything, to his credit, Martin Olsen's really kind of come out and he's actually admitted to what he's done, which a lot of players haven't really had the testicular fortitude, if you will, to do so. I mean, I think it probably gets inflamed a bit by the fact that he did actually take a dive in the, you know, in a match against our biggest rivals, if you will. So it was always going to get a little bit more glamour and importance thrust upon it. But I think, you know, if you're asking me to sort of speculate what will happen, you know, Blackburn Man United, I'm sure there probably will be a bit of diving or something going on, probably for both sides. And to be fair, with us having Diouf in the team, I'd probably say it's more or less a certainty.
As long as the ref has a good game, that's all I'm hoping for.
Well, I find it a bit annoying nowadays that, you know, every big match or every match that seems to happen in the Premier League, at the end of the match, all we're talking about is, you know, some big decision that the ref's got wrong or something. It does rankle me a little bit, but that's probably just me being a bit anal about things, so to speak.
Looking forward to the game against yourselves. Who do you think will maybe cause us problems? I believe in your blog you mentioned that Martin Olsen, imagine him running at Gary Neville next weekend. So do you think he's going to be a big player for you?
I definitely think so. I'll tell you what, it's a real weird turnaround with Martin Olsen, because he, at the start of the season, he was, well, the general perception of him was that he was rubbish, basically. He couldn't string a decent sort of 5-minute spell together in a game. But since the turn of the year, he had like a random appearance against Fulham where they put him on the left wing, and it just literally seemed to spur him on. And ever since then, he's just literally been undroppable. He's got good pace, quick feet, and he's not afraid to, you know, mix it with players that have got a lot bigger reputations than him, which is a good thing. But I think, you know, if say, for instance, Gary Neville does play, I mean, I've got plenty of respect for Gary Neville. He's obviously proved himself over the years and very loyal player. But he, obviously, with him being in the sort of early to mid parts of his 30s, if Olsen can have a go at him, I think, you know, potentially there could be some problems there for you.
David Dunn is a top quality player. He's had a lot of injuries during his career. Do you think he could be a bit of a danger man for us as well?
Definitely. I mean, I think there's the good thing with Rovers this year is that they've actually got a few players that not a lot of people have heard of. You know, they're not like big names in the league, so there is always that surprise element that you'll find. But I mean, David Dunn this year, he's always been really good, but he's managed to have a bit of a spell whereby he's not, you know, he's not got injured as much, and he's managed to string a few games together. He's always been good, and whenever he's on the pitch, we do genuinely look a better side. If you are looking for me to name some other players that might cause a few problems, I wouldn't look too far away from Nikola Kalinic, the Croatian striker. If he does get back on the pitch, you know, he is strong, and he can give most people a good battering, so to speak. You might even remember when we played you at Old Trafford, he had a goal ruled out incorrectly for offside as well.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Mickey, at all. we've got Martin Gams-Pedersen as well. He's another one of your danger men. He likes to score a few goals against us as well. So
he's definitely hot and cold, him though, big time.
Yeah, well, let's hope he has a cold afternoon.
Maybe for you, yeah.
that's what I'm going to hope for. We'll talk about United as well. Are there any players that you're particularly fearful of come the weekend? Obviously, Rooney's touch and go at the minute. Some people say he might be back. I'm doubtful whether he will be back for the game. And what about Berbatov, players like that? Are you fearful of them?
I mean, Berbatov, he's... I know with United, he's like literally, you know, he does get a lot of stick because, let's face it, he doesn't really do an awful lot of running, but he's one heck of a talented player. The only thing I would say is that Rovers tend to suffer a lot with players that have pace, you know, like proper pace, that can run. We've not really got any quick defenders or anything. So, I mean, you know, players like... you know, Nani's got fairly quick feet, and I know that Valencia can sort of motor with the best of them as well. Those sort of players are going to be the ones that are going to cause the damage, and as you say, with Rooney not playing, that's obviously a massive plus point in our corner as well.
Right, I want to ask you one question. We ask everybody this. If you can have any United player, who would you have? Money is no object whatsoever. You have more money than Manchester City, things like that. You're allowed anybody you want, apart from Wayne Rooney.
Well, if I had more money than Manchester City, I wouldn't buy Rocky Santa Cruz, that's for sure. Certainly not for 17 million. That was a good donation to our transfer fund. Yeah, no, I've had a bit of a think about this, actually. In terms of a player that would fit well into our team without money really being much of an object... It might seem a bit of a controversial choice, but I actually think that Michael Carrick could be quite a good choice, because if there's one thing we lack since Tugai really sort of gave it up last year and was you know, went into retirement, it's just that little bit of forward thinking, a little bit of creativity, and also someone just to put the foot on the ball sometimes as well. Outside of that, I mean, without Carrick, I'd come back to Valencia again, because we do lack a bit of pace going forward, so... I know I've kind of picked two, but Carrick and Valencia would be my sort of two picks, I'd say.
I could definitely let you away with that, Mikey, indeed. But before we let you go, just need to get a little bit of a prediction out of you.
I mean, I'm always going to be a bit optimistic, let's be fair. I'm sure I could say the same for you guys as well, with a bit of bias and stuff like that. But I think maybe with Rooney out and with us having a decent home record, and also factoring, obviously, you've got a tough game coming up, I think, on Wednesday, I'm probably going to say a draw. I think a draw might work out pretty good, which I know you probably won't agree with, but it might not work out too bad a result for both teams, because I do think we'll give you quite a hard game.
Well, Ewood Park is a tough place to go. And with my fingers crossed, I wish you the best of luck at the weekend.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
And good luck for the rest of the season as well.
No worries. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, that's the views of our opposition fan this week. We'll briefly discuss it ourselves too. Blackburn, of course, away. Dan, with Chelsea in FA Cup action as well. It's a chance, isn't it, to move above them once again. Rooney definitely out, so it looks like Berbatov's going to get another chance.
Yeah, he'll start, and I hope that Makeda should possibly get a start as well. Go 4-4-2, unless they play someone like we said last week about Giggs sitting in just behind Berbatov. I don't know. The only thing with that is you've no real penetration up front, have you? Giggs isn't going to blast past people. I think overall, I think they've only lost two there this season, though, Ewood Park, so it'll be a tough game. We do need to win as well. You know, they held Chelsea there a few weeks ago as well, so it'll be a very tough game. It always is. But I think we've got to react to the two disappointing defeats.
Just sort of a prediction, and as well as that, I mean, say we did go there and get the same result as Chelsea, come away with a draw. Are you with Dan? Is that it? The title if we don't win?
Yeah, I think we need to win the rest of our games, which we're more than capable of doing. I think this will be a tough game though. Like I think Dan did say, they've only lost twice at home this season. I think it's time some players need to sort of prove themselves. I think Berbatov needs to have a good game to prove himself, and it'll be interesting to see his team selection as well. I mean, do you think he'll go with sort of more of the older players, or do you think somebody like John O'Shea will come in and fill in at right back instead of Gary Neville? I mean, do you think Scholes will start? What about Giggs? And how do you think he'll go with this one?
I think that O'Shea didn't look to have any problems on Wednesday when he came on. I thought he did okay. I think I'd expect him to start over Gary Neville. Plus, Pedersen's quite a quick player as well, isn't he? And I think if you give him a chance to get the ball in the box, they've obviously got players like DeSanto.
I think it's too early to bring Raphael in then after what happened?
Well, that's a good point, actually. I mean, because he could get out of his system, really, give him another game just to say, go on then.
But another error could potentially be demoralising, couldn't it? So
what you get with young players, but there's no reason to say this, that John O'Shea couldn't make a mess of something, or, you know, Gary Neville. So
yeah.
it's a tough one to call. He obviously knows best. He'll probably have a look at Raphael in training and think, has he been affected by getting sent off, and how is his confidence? Yeah, it's a good point, Steve, actually, you know, throwing back in there and just, you know, getting back on the bike, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay, well, what about just a final prediction then, Dov? You're saying we're going to go there and win, yeah?
I think so, yeah. I think it'll be a tough game, but I think we'll get a victory. Yeah, maybe 2-1. Or 1-0. I don't think there'll be too many goals in it.
Dan?
No, I think scrappy 1-0 victory. Berbatov to get the winner.
Great stuff. Well, that is just about the end of episode 35 of the RedCafe.net podcast. As I say every week, get yourself involved on the Facebook group. Send us an email too if you want to. The address is podcast@redcafe.net. And tune in again next week.